88.5 KCSN, and John Fulbright is joining us today. Welcome, John.
Good to be here.
It's, you know, we were talking just a moment ago, and I realized I might have said something that I have to clarify, because I talked to you about how curious and how interested I was in the fact that, you know, since your last album, you know, From the Ground Up, you know, you secured a Grammy nomination, which I'm going to assume no one expects those things. It had to be a moment for you.
Yeah, I think my first question when I got the call was, do I have to go? Like, it's just stuff like that doesn't happen to guys like me.
And the was the answer yes or no? Did they told you, well,
we'd I had to go, yeah. And then I had to figure out, I said, I don't have clothes for something like that. You know.
So it was the whole.
Yeah.
It was back to one of the other things we talked about. Well, your first said one is logistics. There's
right.
Always logistics.
Yes.
You know, this success thing comes with logistics.
Yeah.
But I mentioned in talking about how it's been rare, and it's increasingly rare, to see an artist start to gain such a consensus of both critical and populist acclaim. And I threw that term out, populist, to you, and then I realized that where you're from, talking about being a songwriter, you know, who has a connection with the great populist, it might be intimidating of sorts. You are, I believe, from the same town as Woody Guthrie. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right.
So when you're a songwriter, does that hang in the atmosphere?
Well, you know, I grew into this. This wasn't, I didn't wake up and say, I'm going to write songs, you know. It just was kind of a slow approach. And I didn't know who Woody Guthrie was. His name was on the water tower, and
this is refreshingly frank. I like it.
Well, and I was a big Bob Dylan fan, you know, yeah. And I would read stuff about Bob Dylan, and it would say that his biggest hero was Woody Guthrie, and I remember being proud, like, oh man, Bob Dylan likes that guy from my town, you know, because we didn't know that
right.
Anybody else knew, and so yeah, and you know, as far as Woody's ideology and stuff, I became a fast fan of his writing, really, more than his songwriting, like his novels,
right.
And stuff like that. That's the stuff I can really latch on to.
Well, because of, is it the oaky sensibility, if that's fair, or just the intent, the human intent behind that writing?
It's, yeah, you know, I was, whenever I was getting into Woody, you know, Oklahoma's, it's no secret that it's a pretty red state, and
right.
And I, you know, I've always, that's all I've ever really known, and then to have little Woody kind of
yeah.
Jump in and start shaking stuff up as yeah. Far as, you know, how you're supposed to think about the world.
Wait,
and
this isn't gospel?
And the people in it, yeah, it's certainly kind of, it opened the conversation for a question, I guess. As far as that whole side of it.
And when you start asking big questions of yourself and you start exploring songwriting, I guess in short order you find out there's a lot of questions and not as many answers as I've come, at least in the way I've been able to tally it all up.
Yeah, and it's the human aspect that Woody was really a champion of. And one thing, I'd say if I gained anything from just being in the shade of Woody's, you know, big persona, it's that you don't write hopeless songs. That's been, I'm very adamant about that. I'm pro sad song, but I'm anti hopeless song. There's no reason to do that.
You said I lost my way, that I'd gone astray, but I'm here to stay. maybe I was lying when I told you I was fine, that I didn't mind the shift in line. And all these broken clocks that met their deaths, I measured time in steady breaths. The seconds roll on by so carelessly, no time to stop, talk with me. But all the scores of unlocked doors I lost myself in front of, it seems I'm always rescued in the end. And if I'm found in front of yours with a broken heart and nothing more, would you open up that door and let me in? Said to take the world from off your back. Oh, what good's a train without a track? I told you that the trains were all but dead. Well, I'd rather walk the road instead. Maybe you were right saying I had too much faith. 'Cause we're just a rock in outer space. Put it all together and maybe I might see this world was never, never made. Myself in front of seems I'm always rescued in the end. And if I'm found in front of yours with a broken heart and nothing more, would you open up that door and let me in? Would you open up that door and let me in?
Clearly, you know, as a pianist, I could understand why Leon Russell, again, with the Oklahoma roots, would have eventually informed your sensibility. But listening today, it's clear that you've mentioned Randy Newman before, and Fat Man really lends, you know, much like Randy would do, your playing lends a personality to the song and to the song storyline unto itself. I can hear where Randy really had an influence on you. When you started out, did you have any intentions of really pursuing piano playing and songwriting, or was it just casual in the beginning?
The piano was always my place to go when I needed to go somewhere, because in where I grew up, there aren't any sidewalks or shopping malls. You can deer hunt or play football, and I didn't really
or sit a spell
or yeah and I didn't really want to do that, and so I sat around and played the piano, and it was my, you know, it was where I went when I needed to escape. And it was us, and I thought that being a musician was putting on a tuxedo and playing a 9-foot Steinway and playing Chopin. That's, you know, and I thought, maybe I'll do that. And that's, I didn't know that there were other things that you could do as a piano player that were respectable, that your parents and your grandparents could look at it and go, that's a good job, that's a good steady job. And it was a really slow growth. I just kind of grew into it. I play the piano. I still play the piano every chance I get, because it's, people ask what I do when I'm not playing music. I say I play the piano. That's just what I do.
It's easy for guitarists. You know, we've heard all the stories about how Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix, they took showers with the guitar on. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a little easier for guitarists to always have their musician at their side. A little more challenging for a pianist. They're not as readily available, and frankly, they're not as light either to carry.
That's it. You're always at the mercy of the piano that you're playing. In my dreams, I see a fat man on his face. There's a frown. He's got money in his left hand. In his right, he's got strings that run all over town as he pulls on them tightly. He chokes all it grows, and he keeps watch day and nightly. He plucks life like a rose. Well, in my dreams, I see the young men that will change history. Die for the fat man as he laughs so carelessly. Now in his laughter I hear the sorrow from all the pain that it brings. I hear the mothers weeping softly, wrapped up tightly in his strings. Cut the strings from his fingers, wrap them twice round his throat, and show him not your kind mercy from the laws that he forgot he wrote. Now let us know of that which binds us, that which steals all that grows, that which kills what defines us. To be plucked like a rose.
the playing aspect, did you take training, or are you mostly self-taught?
I had a pretty good ear when I was a really little kid. I've been playing the piano for as long as I can remember. Some of my earliest thoughts are sitting at a piano. Not like I was banging out Mozart or whatever, right. But I could hear a simple melody and I could figure it out. Yankee Doodle, you know, and I could sit there at 7 years old, I could figure out how to
that early.
Figure out Yankee Doodle and stuff like that. I remember I figured out how to play the theme song to The Young and the Restless by ear when I was a little kid. And my mom was...
Isn't that where everyone starts?
That's right. And my mom, it was a dirty trick. I was sitting at the piano at the time, and I remember we had this phone that was on the wall with a big long cord on it, you know, that would stretch all around the house. And I remember she was on the phone, and she, you know, right before she dialed the number to the local piano teacher, she said, "Do you want to take piano lessons while I'm at the piano?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." I was nine. I said, "Yeah, sure." And she didn't tell me that that was about an 8-year contract that I couldn't get out of, no matter how much I screamed and kicked and threw fits, because I hated it. And I never practiced, and I never, but I had to, you know, $10 a week, I had to go.
Oh, sure.
Know, and
you wanted this.
You wanted this. You told me you wanted it. And so, yeah, it's like asking a 9-year-old girl if they want to join a convent.
Right.
Sure, you know, and, but I ended up being really good friends with my piano teacher. She played for the church, the Methodist church. And that was, yeah, every Tuesday it was piano lessons. And she had to not play the song. She would give me a sheet music and make a conscious effort not to run through it real quick because I wouldn't read it. I'd just watch her hands and then do my interpretation of what she just did.
You'd mimic what you just saw, yeah.
And she would get really mad at me. But that was, I mean, that was what I did for years and years. I just kind of pretended to read music.
But at some point, the idea of what you didn't want, which was that regimen, that discipline, you had to acquire and start to self-impose that sense of discipline on you. When did that start to take place?
Well, you know, and it does. Like my dad is a real kind of regimented guy, and his dad was a real regimented guy, and they both have skills. Like his dad was a carpenter, he built houses, and my dad's a welder. And that was
they
always
work kinda, with their hands.
Yeah, they did. They,
it's a tactile look. I made this.
Not only did I make this, but this is going to be around after I'm dead.
Right.
And that
I come from a steel town, so I get it.
Yeah, and that was hammered into my head my whole life. And
where I'm from, probably they made the hammer.
Right. Yeah, and that was, well, and, yeah, and my grandpa's dad had made a hammer, and my dad would show it to me and go, "Look, he didn't have a hammer, and so what did he do? He made a hammer." And that was really hammered into my head. And so whenever I found songwriting, and it was strange. I played music, and I would write poetry for myself, and then one day, you know, it was like, wonder what would happen if you... Some people meld these things into one. You know, it's really hard to do, but I bet you I could do it if I worked hard enough. And that was, I remember being thrilled that I finally had something to get skilled at. It was my own thing. Like my dad had always taught me, like you find something to be good at. And so I still try every day to hone those tools of songwriting and to make these songs as well as I can make them so that they'll stand the test of time, maybe. You know, maybe that one of these songs is going to be around after I'm gone. That's the goal. Choosing
there's a cost. And as for lonely, I can show you how to live a life alone. All it takes is getting used to getting lost. A summer lovers, summer leeches, summer flings on sandy beaches, summer silent till the chances are all gone. The queen of hearts dreams a lover from that cold, cold king above her, while the joker makes his bed up all alone. Feel like something when you're here. Don't I feel my lungs losing air? Well, don't I feel like I can show you I'm the one you can go to. Stands a scarecrow, and if he's hurt, he doesn't say so, and he chases everything he loves away. But at night, when it's colder, there's a bluebird on his shoulder, and he whispers that he'll hold. Don't I feel like something when you're here? Don't I feel my lungs losing air? Well, don't I feel like I can show you I'm the one you can go to?
It's a formal recognition that a lot of people can understand and relate to, where it's Grammy nominee. Maybe you are good. Maybe I should listen.
Yeah, I remember, because we went to the Grammys, and I was so scared. I was scared to death. And we were walking outside of the building there, and they've got the stars on the sidewalk, you know, for who won what Grammy, what year, for what. And we were walking there. There was a group of us, and I remember we stopped at, I think it was 1968. And we looked down, and it was Jimmy Webb.
Ooh.
With Up, Up, and Away. And he took it home. I mean, he won a couple. And he was, I don't know, 18, maybe 17 or 18.
And he's from Oklahoma as well.
From Elk City, Oklahoma, right. Middle of nowhere. I think I live in the middle of nowhere. He lives in the middle of nowhere. And I looked down at that star. We were about to walk in, and just whatever happened was going to happen. But at that moment, I remember thinking, I'm not the first farm kid from Oklahoma to be standing here in this position, feeling exactly what I feel right now in this city.
Have you ever had a chance to meet Jimmy? And
Jimmy's actually, he's become a pretty good friend.
Now, right there alone, that has to have some sort of affirmation, doesn't it?
That's it. No, absolutely. Being able to call Jimmy Webb a friend and a hero at the same time, that's huge.
We've talked about how there has been a consensus of recognition coming your way, and it all seems earnest, and certainly you are earnest in your craft, and we appreciate you coming out here today, taking the time. We hope it's only the first of many visits in which we can tell stories and hear you continue to evolve as a songwriter and a performer. So thanks for coming out to KCSN.
It's been a blast. Thanks for having me.
It's John Fulbright live on 88.5 KCSN.